Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today's For the People is going to put a lot of focus on and share a ton of accurately sourced details about insurance. We're bringing in the Connecticut Insurance Department's interim commissioner, who will be covering a range of related subjects and reminding you about his department's brand new online consumer information center. Then, whether you work or volunteer at a nonprofit or just like supporting them, we're going to introduce you to the Connecticut philanthropic entrepreneur who brought us Shopping Anyway, an innovative app that assists nonprofits with a place to list all their needs while helping kind people looking to make an impact with a place to find nonprofits to support. And we're going to close, continuing with our celebration of the YMCA's 175th anniversary, visiting with a couple of representatives from the Northern Middlesex YMCA. This centrally located Y has a lot to offer, along with a chance for hearty supporters to take the plunge for a purpose by participating in their upcoming 12th annual Chill for Change. We're going to dig right into these interviews and more right after this important update. Last week, we invited you to participate in the ABLIS program for parents entitled Supporting Your Young Child's Development, a Parent Workshop, which was originally scheduled for today, Sunday, January 25th in Stamford. But due to weather issues, it's been postponed to March 8th, so you still have a chance to register. This free workshop offers parents and caregivers practical guidance and trusted information as they navigate developmental concerns, new diagnoses, and key transitions for young children with developmental disabilities. The workshop is free, and on-site childcare can be provided for $25. Learn more and register at ABILIS.us/workshop. That's ABILIS.us/workshop. Well, we are so pleased to open the program this morning with the interim commissioner from the Connecticut Insurance Department. Josh Hirschman is with us, and I hate the clumsy interim commissioner, Mr. Hirschman. If I can call you Josh, that'd be great.
Josh is perfect.
Fantastic. So let's start introducing you a little bit to the folks that have tuned in this morning. I understand, talking to you just a few moments before we turned on the mic, that you've had a little bit of a boomerang experience with the Connecticut Insurance Department. Let's hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So I started at the Connecticut Insurance Department in 2019 as the Deputy Insurance Commissioner under Commissioner Mays. And I served in that role until about May of 2022. And it really was a wonderful job, super interesting. Got to get involved in a lot of different areas of the insurance department and really was able to support consumers and drive innovation in the state.
Did you come from an educational or maybe even a family background that had anything to do with insurance?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people in the insurance industry do come from family. And you always hear, I think, two ways people enter into the insurance industry. It's either, oh, my mom or dad said it's a great place to be, or they currently are working there, or it's I fell into it. And mine is more of the category of I fell into it. I was an attorney in mostly business planning and business litigation practice. And I got to support Governor Lamont in his 2018 campaign, helping drive on the legal side. And I was a deputy treasurer there. And then, you know, I really was interested in getting involved in state government. And people were suggesting that the deputy insurance commissioner role is actually a really cool job to have because insurance is the capital of Connecticut's the capital of insurance. So
yes.
I asked them if it was something I could do. They let me do it, and I really dug into it. I took it very seriously in the sense of trying to learn everything. There's the UConn Law, Insurance Law Center offers LLM classes in insurance work, and I took as many of those as I could. I participated in every single possible area at the insurance department to really learn the space, and I loved it. Insurance is an amazing space to work because there's so much opportunity. And I think whenever I get a chance to talk to younger people about career opportunities, I always tell them to think about insurance. You know, even on the social media side, I was talking to someone just recently, they were saying that they're interested in being, you know, something like an influencer or a social media person. I said, geez, you know, you should look into the insurance industry. And they found a really cool internship with Cigna that did just that. So I think that there's so much opportunity in the space, and people shouldn't pass up, an insurance job.
Yeah. It's so funny, Josh. I remember when I was in high school and, they had the standard, what are the top most secure careers you could go into. And I remember then that, becoming an actuary was going to be a job you could learn and work for life. And when I looked up some of the most secure and stable long-term employment options that a young person or anyone could choose today, it's still being an actuary.
Actuaries are such an interesting group of people because they are so smart in their space, and it's so interesting how they think about risk. And I love talking to actuaries.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. While we are taping this, the Friday before the big one, I'm sure as long as everything is airing on schedule this morning, the snowflakes are beginning to fall, or folks are sharpening their snow shovels or their ice skates or both. Let's talk a little bit about the important role that the Connecticut Insurance Department plays when the state of Connecticut's residents become concerned about disaster preparedness.
Yeah. So the Connecticut Insurance Department is really on the back end of the disasters. We participate with all the other emergency management services in the sense that we're on sort of the recovery side. So, what we recommend ahead of a storm like this is to really make sure that you understand what your home insurance policy covers, have access to that, make sure you know who your home insurance carrier is, and if there is going to be a claim, reach out early to your carrier, and if you have any problems at all reaching out to your carrier, always feel free to reach out to the Connecticut Insurance Department, and our Consumer Affairs Division is always willing to help out and help solve your problems.
Yeah, and I imagine it's almost exactly the same advice if you're a business owner in the state.
Yeah, 100%.
Very good. Obviously, we've been hearing a lot in the news about stuff related to insurance these days. One of those things goes back a few weeks, and that is some changes that came down from the federal level regarding childhood vaccines. And Connecticut's in a very blessed and unique position to be able to react to that and pivot accordingly to make sure that our children are best protected.
I think that there was a little bit of confusion that came out around the childhood vaccines. It's sort of a reclass from the standard that was set by the CDC before. And the bottom line is we put out a press release, I think, in early January. We're still in January. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is the parents still have access to these vaccines. And the only different thing that has to happen now is there might be an additional conversation between the provider and the parent. The goal, of course, is to make sure that those conversations happen. And, the science is clear that vaccines make a difference. The science is also clear that herd immunity is a thing. So we want to make sure that everyone gets vaccinated and that this doesn't create a gap in individuals' vaccination records.
Yeah, I'm sure that you and Commissioner Giuthani over at the Department of Public Health probably are in line over this. But honestly, the bottom line that folks need to know is The situation has not changed here in Connecticut. Everything that a parent of children who received vaccinations in the past, essentially, there's no transition, no changes, nothing that's going to be withheld or taken away from them.
No, not at all. The carriers will still be covering these vaccines. Like I said, it's just your provider might say, you know, instead of saying that they should absolutely have this, they might say, well, what do you think? There might be just more of a dialogue on the front end. And my hope is that that doesn't chill any of the otherwise interest in getting a vaccine. Because like I said, you know, getting a vaccine here for all the childhood diseases is important. Not only is it important from a herd immunity standpoint, but it's also important from a health standpoint. Just, you know, keeping our pool of people in Connecticut healthy will hopefully drive down the cost of insurance in the long run.
Very good. You know, something that had been talked about for a painfully long time would be the changes in the way that insurance policies that had been available on the marketplace, you know, through Obamacare and such, the subsidies for those programs had either changed, lapsed, or ended. Let's talk a little bit about how Connecticut and your department is playing a leadership role, has also been able to pivot to try to help as many folks as possible stay engaged with health insurance.
Well, all the credit is due to the governor on this one. Governor Lamont did an amazing job of sort of driving the legislature to putting into a pot of money to help cover these subsidies. So $70 million was established to help cover the gap in the enhanced subsidy. And where that $700 million really went is to the, where $70 million really went is to the most vulnerable public, the most vulnerable individuals in the state. So if you were at the 200 to 400% federal poverty limit, then you would receive essentially no change in your coverage if you it's from last year. So that enhanced subsidy is covered, and then it tiers down depending on where you fall. But you know, ultimately, the goal is to get as many people access to health insurance. Health insurance, you know, similar to having vaccines, it gives you the opportunity to have vaccines, but it also gives you the opportunity for, you know, preventative care. And again, if the goal is to have a healthier pool of people, then getting care early and getting care often is going to drive the ultimate cost of insurance down in the state. So I think that right now the numbers are around 3% of an increase year over year in the exchange, which is amazing. And I think that's, you know, that's because of Governor Lamont's quick action there. And I would say that it'll be interesting to see what happens in the federal government, because it's going to be very difficult to continue having subsidies, you know, piecemeal together like this. But the other thing I just want to know is you have until January 31st right now to get coverage for starting February 1. So if you didn't already get coverage and you're listening, please log on, check out the you know, ACA for Connecticut, and they have a great team over there. They'll be able to set you up with insurance pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, and I'm counting on being able to talk with some folks from Access Health CT to provide a little bit more concentrated discussion around that whole thing. But to leave this subject before we do, Josh, can you please just what is the message that you have for the younger people who may be looking at some changes in their insurance situation and are weighing whether or not to actually keep health insurance?
It's a very tough situation, I think, for a lot of people, because there are a lot of people that make above those limits that we were discussing and they're stuck with having a high premium, and they say to themselves that they're very healthy. So, you know, should they sacrifice their funds today to make sure that they have insurance? That is a tough question, but ultimately, you don't realize how much you need in health insurance until you have health, until you have a problem. And so I would say you have to figure out a way to stay insured. I know it's a difficult time, but the cost is worth the benefit on this one.
Very good. Thank you. One of the tried and true providers that has been a staple of the Connecticut health insurance marketplace is ConnectiCare. And they've experienced some changes recently to the extent that you're working hard to make sure that their customers are fully informed every step of the way. Can you walk us through the backstory and how your department is working on addressing concerns from ConnectiCare clients and consumers today?
Yeah, so ConnectiCare has moved to a new system, the system which is run by Molina Healthcare, who is now ConnectiCare's parent. And we understand that there have been some issues with the system and integration. In fact, just Wednesday of this week, the 21st, we put out a consumer notice about that to make sure that consumers understand what to do. So if you are running into a problem right now, your coverage is active as of January 1, 2026. So don't worry about your coverage. If you have problems with your ID cards, they've been mailed, and if you haven't received them yet, you know, please reach out to the Connecticut Insurance Department or the ConnectiCare website or Access Health. We can help. Someone is going to be able to help you. It's a confusing time for a lot of people, but my understanding is the matter has been resolved. There's just a little bit of a tail to this where people are, you know, they might not yet have thought that they needed their insurance cards. And because, you know, sometimes you don't realize that you need your health insurance card until you go see your doctor. And so, there, you know, just there's a little bit of a tail here. But, you know, I can say that ConnectiCare and Molina have been working very hard at making sure that all their consumers are covered, protected, and resolving this little hiccup that's taking place.
Very good. Well, similarly to the way you are providing all of this resource and support to ConnectiCare clients, really anyone doing business in the insurance space in Connecticut and anyone who is an insurance customer, no matter what kind of insurance it is, can benefit from visiting the Connecticut Insurance Department's relatively new Consumer Information Center, which we've been talking about a little bit on this program over the past couple of months. This is a great resource, and as you kind of discussed early in the program, you know, insurance is kind of an interesting space, and it's got a lot of products, a lot of complicated moving parts to it, and your Consumer Information Center really helps to kind of break things down in ways that everybody can access and understand.
Yeah, I mean, look, check out our website. We try our best to make everything as easy as possible. We've been working with the state of Connecticut because all the agencies have guidelines on what their websites look like. But, you know, the Consumer Information Center has tons of resources. And, you know, when you're thinking about auto insurance at your renewal point or you're thinking about health insurance, go to the website. It can answer many of the questions that you have. It can look up, you know, whether or not your agent that you're discussing with is licensed or there are complaints, or if you look at the company that you're thinking about leveraging for any of your insurances and see what types of complaints come up with those companies. So our goal is really to give consumers as much information as possible so that they can make the best decisions. I know that buying insurance doesn't always seem like an important thing. But when you need insurance, it becomes very important. And it's one of those things where you're giving someone money today for something that they're going to ideally help you with in the future. So you want to make sure that you're giving the person or the right company your money.
Yeah. And in the last moment or two that we have with you, Interim Commissioner Hirschman, your predecessor was extremely passionate about making sure both the industry professionals and the public and the communities here in Connecticut were up to speed in terms of how the insurance industry is beginning to grapple with things like climate change and global warming. How do you take the baton from your predecessor and continue both the efforts that have already been put in place and perhaps introduce or support improvements?
Yeah, I mean, I know I have some pretty big shoes to fill. Commissioner Mays did an amazing job for the state of Connecticut. He was also the National Association of Insurance Commissioners president for a while, which helps the state because he's really steering the national conversation in insurance. And as you may or may not know, insurance is state-based regulation. So for the majority of insurance, the states are the final regulator. There's no federal overlay. So when we're talking about climate issues, they matter. They matter from a lot of different perspectives. They matter from an exposure perspective. They matter from a cost perspective. They matter from a solvency perspective. And it's something that, you know, I am super focused on, trying to figure out ways to incorporate more resiliency in the consumer's options. And what I mean by that is fortified homes, fortified roofs. Mm. There's fortified programs down south where, you know, there are grants that are given to consumers to be able to get these roofs that are going to withstand some of these high winds. We're going to be getting more and more severe storms. The frequency and the severity is just going to continue to increase. So I look at my job as to try to attack every single one of those risks related to it, right, that I discussed. Mm. I'm also really interested in innovation, and I think that the use of artificial intelligence is going to increase availability and affordability of insurance. And I think figuring out the best way to make sure that carriers are leveraging it in a way that's meaningful, that's responsible, and that's actually helpful to consumers. So I think that there's a lot of interesting and fun areas of the insurance industry that we're going to see change in the short term. Or nearer term. Insurance typically moves slow, but I think as innovation and AI starts to get leveraged by the insurance industry in a more and more meaningful way, we'll see change happening at a higher clip.
Well, I'm looking forward to future conversations with you, sir. The Connecticut Insurance Department is committed to making sure that insurance companies follow the state's laws and treat you fairly. They offer guidance, support, and education, as well as regulating the industry in a way that promotes fair competition and makes sure insurance is available to everyone. Their interim commissioner is Josh Hirschman, kind enough to chat with us about a wide variety of important things this morning. We hope you've learned something, as I have. And Josh, thank you very much. Great to meet you, and I look forward to chatting again. All right. As we mentioned in the introduction, we are going to introduce a individual who I had referred to as a philanthropical entrepreneur. Yes, Christina Preet is with us. She is the founder and owner of Shopping Anyway, partnering with organizations to ensure contributions reach those in need efficiently and effectively. With notifications and reminders for events, donation drives, and volunteer shifts so that nonprofits can actively engage as well as donors actively engage in the causes that matter. So we will be getting into our conversation. We just want to remind you that our community partners at Westport Pride are hosting a Begin 2026 Together Happy Hour to bring the community together for an evening of connection and celebration. The event's happening on January 29th at Nomad Restaurant in Westport from 6 to 8 p.m. This welcoming gathering offers an opportunity for Pride members and allies alike to connect with neighbors, make new friends, and celebrate the strengths of a diverse community. Learn more about this and other activities at westportpride.org. All right, Christina, great to connect with you. We've interacted a few times over email, and I really appreciate my my partner and Lithuanian coworker, Pam Rasevicius, introducing us. This is a fantastic new twist on something that I gather may have been available in different pieces or configurations, but it looks like you really kind of rolled a lot of stuff together to help ensure that nonprofits that partner with you can kind of maximize their reach and you know, kind of fully integrate their needs out to the philanthropic and volunteer and donor communities. So I'm excited to hear more about you and how this whole idea and inspiration germinated. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Thanks for having me. So, you know, my husband and I have been volunteers in pretty much all our lives, starting back to high school. My husband Buddy's been a Milford Rotarian for 28 years. I was very involved in the American Red Cross Board of Directors for several years, Milford Education Foundation, various organizations, be it on the board of directors or just volunteering a couple hours time, you know, and putting in time and also, you know, contributing monetarily. But we always kind of knew that, you know, nonprofits are always seeking new ways to engage donors, keep donors, you know, making sure the news gets out there of their needs. So, you know, I really kind of started also, we were involved in our kids growing up and PTAs and sports. And it really, this one of the sparks of the idea came from a PTA meeting back around 2015. We were having a open house for parents, and we were having a PTA table, and they asked, you know, should we have anything? And I said, somebody mentioned bottled waters. I said, I'm going shopping anyway. I'll get them. So, you know, I always knew that, you know, people want to help, you know, and if it just takes a little bit of something, you know, one of our taglines is a lot of people helping a little helps a lot. We all come together. We give 2 hours of volunteer time. We donate a case of peanut butter to a food bank because they're in need of it. We all can do something, especially when you rally and you put the need out there. You know, we often see people, you know, come together and get the needs to the organization. So this really is a communications tool. My dad was a philanthropic giver, a quiet giver. He was a check writer. But when he passed in 2022, we sold our childhood home in Devon, Milford, right over the Stratford Bridge. It's the we sold the house we grew up in. And, you know, I wanted to kind of use the money. I could have, you know, send a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there to the various organizations he supported. But I thought, let's create a tool that, you know, can be able to have a two-way communication with organizations and nonprofits of their needs. And that could be needs for items, volunteers, and then even just a one, you know, links to events, you know, golf tournaments, galas, that sort of thing. We call it a one-stop shop. So, you know, 2 years of development with our developer, Peralta Design, and we collaboratively worked together about the various features, and it all came to fruition last year, first on Apple and then on Android, and now we're getting it out and wanting to have nonprofits use it and see it as it's a free trial for to see it as a tool to really stay engaged with their donors.
Very good. Did you end up recruiting or partnering with some of the nonprofits or any of the nonprofits that your dad was so kind in regularly supporting just with donations?
Yeah, mainly it was Bethel Center, our homeless shelter and social services organization here in Milford. I found out after he passed, I met with them, and I had known, you know, I was a contributor, but very, you know, not as engaged as my dad was, but I found out, you know, after he passed, he was giving monthly, writing monthly checks for 10 years. And, you know, they've been very helpful and collaborative with me in developing some of the finer features of this and, you know, see it as a tool or using it as a tool. So, yeah, and I, you know, it really is for organizations that, you know, have pressing needs. And right now what they do is they put out wish lists on their social media. They send email blasts. But that's one way, right? You just hope people pick it up. They hope people engage. But this will be able, this tool allows notifications to go to people's phones if they follow and favorite an organization in particular. So a notification will pop up on their phone that there's a need for, we're low on cereal. So, yeah, they were instrumental. They're a wonderful organization.
Very good. Well, I was going to have you start by breaking down some of the other things that a nonprofit agency would need to know versus a donor when they're getting engaged in this contribution revolution, as you've so rightly dubbed it, with shopping anyway. And folks, as Christina mentioned, you can literally while you're listening to the program or the podcast, go on your phone and go to whichever platform you're using and download the Shopping Anyway app to begin your new direction in this advanced way of philanthropy that Christina and her husband and their team has introduced here, right here in our listening area, right here out of Milford, Connecticut. So, a fantastic idea. If you'd like to know more about the organization, you could also go to shoppinganyway.com as well. So, so Christina, let's beyond the few quick tips you just related, let's start with nonprofits. We want to bring many more of them to the Shopping Anyway platform. What are the things that they need to know to begin to engage with you? Because I know qualifying them is critically important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So nonprofits can reach out to us, info@shoppinganyway.com. Send us an email. But yeah, we'll engage. We'll have a, I like to do a half hour Zoom to take them through how it works. I kind of recommend to just anybody who is interested that works for a nonprofit, just download it as, you know, a person who likes to help their local animal shelter. Maybe they work for a food pantry, but they like to donate cat food to their local animal shelter. So that's just for the donor, name, address, email, phone. But the nonprofit, yes, we will engage. We will, you know, take them through it. It's a free, no obligation trial. It will eventually be a subscription service that I will take them through. Opportunities to pay for that could be a sponsor at the bottom of their profile page. So there's always a sponsor opportunity where they could have exposure to a sponsor who might help them pay for it. But also, if they decide that there's, you know, they don't necessarily want to, they don't maybe have it in their budget the first year, when, you know, when I do start charging and we do start the subscription service, a free static page will be available. I just want to, I want the nonprofits, especially the guys who, you know, they, you know, the big guys have the big budgets and they have the staff and the social media sure. and the PR. I kind of am aiming it towards under, you know, 2 million, you know, where, you know, we only have a budget of so much. We're limited. So I do, you know, like to talk to directors of development, executive directors, and then also like to bring in, you know, an administrative person who it's very easy to add items. It is extremely user-friendly, you know, in order to, you know, to work with the system. There's no computer special needs as far as HTML or anything like that. So we also will be working with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council over the next month or two to try to get some educational series. So keep an eye on the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, BRBC, and I'll be taking through not only their nonprofits who are part of the council, taking them through an education about this new tool, but also, you know, companies who may want to be a part of it from a sponsorship perspective. You know, they love the idea, they love the exposure because it is such a, you know, engaging tool. But I will be working with them, yes.
Sort of like a corporate adopt-a-cause through thanks to Shopping Anyway, right?
Correct, yes.
Very good, good. And I really love the fact that, once you kind of, bring this to the next step where there is actually a membership investment on the part of the nonprofit partner, that you're also giving them some sort of a presence on the app, so that people don't have to possibly disconnect because they want to go and look at the website of the nonprofit to learn more about them, and then suddenly the doorbell rings or bright shiny object distracts them, and then the whole philanthropic chain of events leading up to a successful connection or donation is interrupted.
Correct. Yes. And notifications can be sent, like I said, if they follow, if there's an urgent need, if there's a deadline, we need bottled water by, next Sunday, and of course the donor can ignore it, but they also, with the next five clicks on their phone, can ship it via various ways too. So if it pops up, maybe they only want it dropped off, or the organization can set up, we will take Amazon, we'll take Walmart, we'll take Target shipments, so that's all up to the organization. It's very customizable that way. And what's nice too is the organization will get emails every time someone favorites them, every time someone makes a commitment, and every time someone drops something off. So it's a constant back and forth communication, and it also allows for quantities. So we need, 20 cases of bottled water. Someone goes in, donates two. They get an email, organization gets an email, but then the next donor that goes in, it'll drop down to 18. So there's a running tally of needs. Right now, my organizations that are on there, they have infinite needs, which I'm sure you can imagine. Sure. But if there were ever a need to set quantities, we have too much peanut butter, not enough jelly. We have too much tuna, not enough mayonnaise. They'll be able to set that as well.
That's great. Let's switch gears to kind of the army of donors that we hope to attract to Shopping Anyway. You said it's a very simple, four or five different pieces of critical information gets the whole ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Name, address, email, phone is all we ask for. We don't hold, there's no financial information. We also don't sell your information. The only time, if you make a commitment to donate something, the organization you're making the commitment to will simply see that with those pieces of information as well, name, address, email, phone. And that's really all we ask for. We're not going to sell information. We're a conduit. I call myself a conduit between your favorite nonprofit and you as a donor to kind of always just know, what they need. I mean, a lot of people want to help, but it's a way to just continually stay engaged, because people, I believe, and I've seen rise to the occasion when things happen. So that's kind of the key, just to keep that engagement going with donors. I always tell my nonprofits too, start with your existing donor base. You've got some diehard, donors who will just, jump at whatever you need. Start with your MailChimp, start with your Constant Contact, let them know you're on this platform. And then it also is an opportunity to engage new donors. So let's say you had someone move, and because it is a nationwide opportunity, you had someone move from Chicago, Illinois. They regularly donated to the animal shelter there, and they moved to Milford, Connecticut. They can search on organization by category and by location and say, oh, here's the Milford animal shelter. I'm now going to donate there. So that's the beauty of it as well, is that you could have donors just opportunistically going, oh, I've got some extra, I bought extra because it was on sale. And, the food pantry needs this. So they can do a search as well and find organizations to support.
And I guess really from a very high level, and while it may not be a major point of focus, in some ways this can help save the planet to an extent, because if there's a company that has a surplus of like commercial furniture, and then there's a nonprofit that just wanted to kind of refresh their offices, they wouldn't have to go out and buy new, and ostensibly the potential donor wouldn't see all that furniture in a dumpster, right?
Correct. Yes. And I have had an organization reach out to me. So on the flip side of this, where, you know, we have extra money we raised and we're looking to find organizations who are in need of things. So, it has that's already happened where they raise their own money and now we need to, I don't want to say get rid of it, but we're looking for places who are in need of extra funds or extra goods or yes. So, yes, that is a possibility as well.
Excellent. So any other final words to either nonprofit representatives that might be listening or individuals who are in the process of downloading Shopping Anyway or are going to be talking about it later today or soon after they hear our conversation?
No, just like I said, our two taglines mainly are a lot of people helping a little helps a lot. And, we connect those who ask, how can I help, with those who say, here's what we need. So, it really is, if you were to download it, again, as just a donor who likes to help, again, name, address, email, phone, just get familiar with it, see who's on there now, and then see how it works, because there's sections for, it's really a one-stop shop of items needed, volunteers needed is another tab you can click on right there in the and on a profile page of a nonprofit. And then there's other ways to help. But also on their profile page, you'll be able to go right to their website, go to their donate direct page, which takes you out of the app. I don't care. As long as they're engaging, you can read about their background. You can you make a phone call from there. So it really is a one-stop shop. And then obviously as spring comes around, they're going to have more outdoor outings and they're going to have their fundraisers. That'll be in there for the organizations. So I would just say play around with it, see who's on there now, and then organizations who do want to engage, keep an eye on the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, brbc.org, and, be on the lookout, and, I'll put it on our social media. We're on all the social Shopping Anyway, and then the BRBC will put it on their social media and their website, and just, in the meantime, until those happen, those educational kind of series about the tool, you could always email me at info@shoppinganyway.com. And again, I always set up a half hour Zoom just to take people through it, let them know how comprehensive it is. And that's really, that's really where we're going. But yeah, there'll be more to come, in getting this out there more and more.
Great. At this point, all nonprofits can get on board at no cost. You need Correct. To get in touch with our guest this morning, Christina Preet, founder and owner of the app Shopping Anyway, your prime tool to engage in the contribution revolution by connecting you if you wish to donate food, provide basic necessities, volunteer, whatever, to help those in need with nonprofit and service organizations on the other end, all in this easy-to-use app. So, Christina, thank you so much. Once again, shoppinganyway.com is the website to go if you need to learn more. And we look forward to talking to you again, Christina, because I imagine this revolution is going to really start getting some traction here and all part of the dream of an individual and the inspiration of someone right here in Milford, Connecticut, and also in honor of your dad, who was such a great and quiet philanthropic giver. So thank you so much for your time today, and we will talk to you again. Well, as you have already heard previously on the program, the YMCA as an institution and a movement is celebrating their 175th year of existence here in 2026. So after speaking with our friends down on the Central Connecticut Coast Network, we decided to create a series and open it up to any YMCAs that are interested in coming on the program to talk about some of the awesome things that they do in the areas that they serve. So today we are moving to part two with our Northern Middlesex YMCA team. We've got Jay Andronico on the line. He's the Vice President of Development and Strategic Projects. And Ben Silliman is the Camp Director. And we're going to be talking a lot about an upcoming event that is going to be 12 years strong here in 2026. That is their annual Chill for Change, which in great part is going to be supporting their Camp Ingersoll. So we'll be talking all about that with Ben in just a few moments. But Jay, let's kick it off with you. If I was running into you at some sort of a fundraiser or social event or on the sidelines at a kid's soccer game, and I said, hey, what do you do, and why do you do it? Tell us your background with the
Y. Well, I'm actually pretty new here at the YMCA, about 2 months in. I went to Springfield College. Springfield College was born out of the YMCA movement, so the mission is near and dear to my heart. What we do here for all ages, from birth to senior citizens, allowing people to become healthy, being able to have services. We have a men's residence here. So, we have everything and anything anybody would need. If you want swimming lessons, you need after school care or before school care. We do it all, and we do it for the community of Middlesex, Northern Middlesex, and we're just proud to be, over almost 140 years a part of that. So you look at the Y being 175, well, Northern Middlesex has really been around for a majority of that.
Big chunk of that, yeah. So as you were going, finishing up your college education, did you already have basically a focus on, applying everything you were learning toward going to work for the Y?
No, I actually was a sport management major and worked in sports for about 25 years and determined that based off my Springfield College education and the EMAC's philosophy and the WISE philosophy of spirit, mind, and body, that I wanted to give back. So I left the corporate world and went into nonprofit, started at Special Olympics Connecticut, worked my way around a little, and now ended up here where I know that I'm home.
Oh, that's great. Having that long and deep roots in sports and sports education, and knowing all the incredible things that participating in sports can do to build a successful life and a career, it really seems like kind of a logical extension from where you started.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Like I said, I mean, everything has led me to here. Being part of an organization, the Northern Middlesex YMCA, and, we're in the midst of a capital campaign to raise dollars to renovate, put an addition on, and really make it, a first-class destination for everybody in Northern Middlesex, in the coming years and for the years to come. So,
Was this a facility that you had even a passing familiarity with in your prior corporate life?
No. I mean, I was a Y kid myself in Norwalk, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So I learned to swim at the YMCA in Norwalk. But no, I didn't know about it until I saw a job posting and then really started talking with Michelle, the CEO, and coming on board and trying to, raise the additional capital that we need to take care of the capital campaign and make the building the object that we want it to be.
So as you were coming on board and getting to know the organization, for folks like you who may not be familiar with it, can you just give us kind of a brief verbal tour of the facility, if you will? What tell us a little bit about the actual physical organization and the layout?
Certainly. I mean, well, the good thing is the layout's going to change. The Welcome Center will be down near the parking lot right now. But you come into the Welcome Center, you come into the front desk, you're greeted, by the staff. You then can either go a number of different places, to the fitness room, to yoga, to spinning, to swimming, basketball. So there's a lot of different things going on, and there's a schedule of events every day that are going on that are taught by trainers. So honestly, it's just the ability to come in and exercise if you like, or if you just want to come in to socialize, we certainly have that as well. So I would say at the end of the day, it's really just an open community where people can benefit from what we do and the services we provide, and at the end of the day, making the community a better place.
So as you were coming on just sort of amidst the holiday period, an interesting time because you're kind of closing out a lot of the programs that were going on for the summer and into the beginning of the school season while looking forward to what is in store for 2026. Are there any specific programs that you noted early on were extremely popular there, or any particular groups or demographics in the community that you see who come to the Northern Middlesex Y as kind of like their home away from home?
Well, that's certainly true, but I would pass it off to Ben, because the camp in the summertime is a high point of
the
what we do.
Yes. That's great. Sure. Ben Solomon, thank you for joining us today. Now, aside from being a camp director at Camp Ingersoll, you have 12-month-a-year functions through the Northern Middlesex YMCA?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you again very much for having us. But yeah, this is a full-time, year-round position that we're very well-versed in handling the what do you do the rest of the year kind of question. So yeah, I mean, when we have around 550 to 600 kids out at camp every day, a staff team of around 115 that we hire over every year, you can imagine the off-season is really jam-packed with making sure that we're ready to go on the right foot. We only have about 10 weeks to get it right and make sure that we have life-changing camp experiences for all our kids. So a lot of it is that preparation and getting ready. We also hosted around 50 to 60 groups out at camp this year with team building, character development, school picnics, corporate retreats, stuff like that. So we're always staying busy out there at our campgrounds in Portland.
That's awesome. It really kind of becomes a location where folks who may not have that kind of familiarity or those deep childhood or teen roots in the YMCA, an opportunity to kind of get to know the organization in what it sounds like is one of your most successful venues and programs.
Oh, very, very much so. And that's our goal, right? To engage families, to help strengthen our community. And we do a lot of that by youth development and also opportunities to like enjoy the campgrounds at our family nights that we have every other Thursday in the summer. And then we have an outdoor center membership for a very low fee where people can come out and enjoy the grounds and recreation with their families when they're not at camp.
So what does Camp Ingersoll offer to the average Northern Middlesex YMCA member?
Yeah, so in the off season, we have basketball courts. We will have pickleball courts coming this spring that we're really, really excited about. Yeah. We have mountain bike trails through a partnership with Stage One Cycling Club. Great organization, nonprofit like us that have helped develop our mountain biking trails. We have hiking trails. We're located on Job's Pond, so we have some fishing and just enjoying nature, natural environment. We also host birthday parties, like I said, team building. And a lot of varied interests, and according in addition to our great quality summer camp program.
Wow, that's fantastic! What a great variety, and to be blessed with all of those resources to connect community members. And as Jay mentioned, and I mentioned off mic, I'm a child of the Y, Waterbury YMCA, going back to another one of those vintage Y institutions that had a bit of a growth spurt about 25, 30 years ago. And, I was still active in the organization when it went through its big expansion and building projects and adding pools and stuff like that. Just a spectacular spectacular place to go. And the one thing that I really like to drive home, and I know both of you could speak to, is that it's a safe place. It's a welcoming place, no matter how bad a day, particularly a young person might have had at school or out on the playground or at home. It's a place to go where they could find a shoulder to cry on, a friendly ear to listen, and activities that could boost their spirit, right?
Oh, of course. And through our association with the Y, and I mean, that's our main goal. We want to make sure that kids can be kids, families can be families, and spend time together while growing. You know, we have a high ropes course, we have a low ropes course, we have boating, we have swim lessons out at camp, we have archery, we have Campfire Fridays. But our main goal is to use all those things to help kids develop, pursue the interests that they want to, overcome new challenges, earn new skills, figure out how to manage your emotions and cope with what's going on in their lives, and doing it, like you said, in a really fun, safe, engaging way. We know that kids and youth thrive from non-parental adult role models, and really every year that's what we're trying to provide for kids in our communities.
Great. Well, I wanted to spend the tail end of our conversation today getting more people involved with and helping them get to know the Northern Middlesex Y and Camp Ingersoll, as well as, reminding folks that are familiar with the organization or very active that you've got a major event coming up, the 12th annual Chill for Change. For folks who may be feeling like they can be hardy and get involved in this activity directly, or maybe get a bunch of supporters to nominate them to participate, let's hear all about it.
Yeah. So thanks for mentioning that. The Chill for Change, it's our 12th annual jump into Job's Pond at the site of Camp Ingersoll on February 28th this year. So this is our, it's commonly referred to in other circles as the Polar Plunge, but it's our annual fundraiser where we sign up as individual or teams, and then we raise money for our to jump in the pond. We have a couple of different awards for best team theme, best dressed, and we get together at 1 o'clock on February 28th, and we jump in, and it's a really great event where all those funds raised go directly to providing scholarships and financial assistance for families in need of that in order to attend summer camp. So our goal is to raise over $40,000 this year and have more than 50 jumpers. So we are right now starting to gain momentum. We have 20 jumpers, 8 teams, and we're looking to just increase that awareness and have anyone interested in joining us. So like you said, just checking out the teams, and if they have something to give and want to support us, they can do that. If they want to come down and see our jump at 1 o'clock on February 28th, it would be great to have everyone who wants to join us. It's a really fun, quick event that makes a huge impact on families in our community.
Yeah, but a party atmosphere nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have to, right? Yeah. It's
the hot chocolate can't be hot enough, right?
Yeah.
Well, you also, as we play this on the first weekend of February with almost 4 weeks left to go before the big event, is it too late for folks that might be listening that might want to contribute as sponsors to get involved?
Oh, no. We're still accepting sponsors, accepting jumpers, teams. This is one thing that we've worked really hard, and Jay's been a huge go-getter in this, is that, like, one great thing about this event is it's getting the word out, and then people sign up and just do it. So it's pretty easy, but we want to get as many people involved as early as possible. So now is the perfect time. They can contact myself or Jay, go on our website, campingyourself.org, and get some of that information.
Excellent. Well, let's end the conversation on a serious note, because While this is a really cool and fun event, the 12th annual Chill for Change event coming up at the end of February, it's for an important reason, and that's because I have come to understand that the Y hates very few things, but one of the things they hate is saying no. They never say no if somebody needs to be part of the Y, and that's why raising all of this support and scholarship money is so important, because I have to believe every year dozens, if not hundreds, of members of the greater Northern Middlesex communities, members come to you guys needing the Y, but maybe not necessarily being able to afford the the straight membership.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. And like, it's no surprise, right, that costs are rising. We are a nonprofit, but we need to remain sustainable, so our costs are rising too. So we're doing everything possible to try to ensure that families that need our services and need a bigger community to grow and be supported by, that we're able to offer that. So last year, we had over $140,000 in assistance giving out just for camp, and we look to grow that every year. So this is one event that really helps us and enable us to provide even more every year. So everything, like you said, everything goes to providing these experiences for campers, and then also in turn helping strengthen communities and families as well.
The reason why the YMCA as an institution and as a movement globally has sustained for these 175 years, almost 150 of them in Greater Middletown with the Northern Middlesex YMCA, two of their representatives on the program today celebrating the Y, Jay Andronico, Vice President of Development and Strategic Projects, and Ben Silliman, a camp director at Camp Ingersoll. We hope you'll come out. You can go to the Camp Ingersoll website, any of the social sites for Camp Ingersoll or the Middlesex YMCA, or directly to the Middlesex YMCA website. MidYMCA.org is where you find them. Gentlemen, best of luck with the event. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll see you down at the Y.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.